and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests, and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
This week's edition of The 10th Voice. I'm Una Nally, here with my wife and co-hostess, Fiona Nally. Behind the board today is our sound engineer and producer, also Fiona Nally, who is doing this for the first time. We have two special guests in our studio today. Debbie and Tom Jackson are the
parents of a transgender daughter. And Debbie has become a well-known activist for transgender rights, who we have known for nearly 5 years. Debbie has spoken in many venues on many aspects of transgender advocacy, but today she's going to talk about something a little different here with Tom, the dark side of advocacy and the toll it can take upon the fighters and their families. Fiona will finish up the show with a community calendar update, but first I'm going to take a look at some of the LGBT news of the week. Okay, and we're moving on here to our interview. We have a little snafu with the theme music, but we'll get that for you here later on. Today, we are going to spend some time with two very special guests that we have had on before that are in our studio. Debbie and Tom Jackson are the parents of a transgender daughter who many of you have seen on the cover of National Geographic magazine and in numerous appearances speaking out on behalf of transgender civil rights around the world. Avery, that is. They have been doing this for nearly 5 years, and Fiona and I have known the two of them for that same time. Debbie has spoken in many venues on many aspects of transgender advocacy, but today she and Tom are going to talk about something a little different, which we're calling the dark side of advocacy and the toll that it can take upon the fighters and their families. Debbie and Tom, welcome to Trans Talk.
Hello, thank you.
So, because there are probably a few people that out there, I don't know, maybe people that are recent immigrants to the Kansas City area that have not heard about the good work that both of you have done, could you tell a little bit about yourself and why you are doing what you do?
Sure. And just to clarify one thing you said, we've known you about 5 years. We first got involved in the transgender community here in Kansas City when Avery told us at the age of 4 that she is really a girl. And we really decided that we needed to get more involved with understanding what that was, and what better way than to meet some trans adults. But we didn't start our real advocacy work until just about 3 years ago, and we kind of fell into that by accident. So for the first couple of years, we thought it was really important to kind of keep our mouths shut, unlike some famous people that you've just mentioned in the news, and learn about the trans community and what the real issues were and the hardship and the language and all of that before we started coming out trying to speak on behalf of Avery and kids like her. And do you want to tell a little bit about the story, Tom?
Which specifically? What would you like me to tell?
Our family story. You don't talk a lot, so this is your chance.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, like my wife said, we started getting involved just as a way to learn from people in the community and learn more about the community and find ways to be able to relate to our child and then be able to help her with the challenges of growing up in a world, as we know, that may not be as accepting as we would like. So I think a lot of the stuff that we do is just relative to our own desire to have a safe and happy place for Avery to grow up.
Now, Debbie, you did say that you've been, you know, only really active in the last 3 years. But I do remember that when I first came out, you were active somewhat locally, and that you were always there for many transgender persons in the area as a person who would listen to them, who was a good sounding board for their problems, who actively welcomed some of the most scared and tenuous persons that came to events. You would be the person who would come up and approach them and help ease their fears. And also, early on in my transition, we had a situation where we didn't have any family to spend Christmas dinner with, and you reached out on your own just based on a Facebook post I made and had Fiona and myself over to your house, you and Tom, and you cooked this remarkable dinner over there and welcomed us, and you know, we even exchanged gifts. And so you may not have been doing as much national level advocacy as you were then, but you, I think you've always been a true friend and true advocate for the community, even if it was lower key. So I think that's what I meant, really.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I do appreciate that, because a lot of people do look at us now as being people who are out front, vocal, being interviewed quite a bit, speaking publicly, traveling around to do the same. And a lot of other parents will say, I just don't know if I can do that yet. I'm not sure if I would be able to do that and keep my job. I don't want to out my child. I don't think they're ready, or something along those lines. And I do try to tell them, so much of the activism is the stuff that doesn't take place. It is just being involved in your community. It's welcoming other people. It's giving them those mom hugs that they might not have gotten in years, if ever. And, you know, being a safe spot for people to land and talk to. So thank you for that reminder, because I do say that to other people a lot. But when it comes to talking about ourselves, I forget that that's activism. I just think that's what we're all supposed to do as human beings. So how can that be activism?
Well, you were an activist on behalf of many that suffered from a Lyme disease beforehand as well. So, and it looks like we're going to take a short break and come back to talk a little bit more about that. Thank you for listening to Trans Talk.
Support for KKFI comes from the Unicorn Theater, presenting Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical, a road trip adventure made for dancing in the theater. Based on the cult film, Priscilla follows three friends who take a battered old bus to find love, family, and the best of drag, featuring the music of Cyndi Lauper, Donna Summer, and more. Priscilla runs May 31st through June 25th. Tickets are online at unicorntheater.org.
Winona LaDuke, Indigenous Voice, on The Next Wings, Saturday at 2:30.
Support for KKFI comes from the Unicorn Theater, presenting Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical, a road trip adventure made for dancing in the theater. Based on the cult film, Priscilla follows three friends who take a battered old bus to find love, family, and the best of drag, featuring the music of Cyndi Lauper, Donna Summer, and more. Priscilla runs May 31st through June 25th. Tickets are online at unicorntheater.org.
And welcome back to Trans Talk. We're here with Tom and Debbie Jackson talking about a little bit about advocacy, and about to get into some of the dark side of advocacy as it is. I just made a comment before the break that, you know, Debbie has also been an activist before on behalf of those suffering from Lyme disease, correct?
Yes, yes. And I realized that after 20 years of having to fight to be heard by doctors and not be told that I was imagining pain, that it was all in my head, or that I was seeking attention, or after so many years of trying to talk about it and losing friends and family who were sick of hearing about it, or who couldn't handle understanding why I was hurting and didn't want to go out to the bars every weekend and things, that it was really isolating. It was stigmatizing. Insurance didn't want to cover any of the costs associated with it. Doctors didn't believe me. I was told I was crazy. And then voila, all of those same things are said about the trans community.
Exactly.
So it was the best training ground I could have had possible for knowing what we were going to be in store for, advocating for Avery and other people to be taken seriously and heard and validated.
And that is, yes, exactly why I was bringing it up, because it plays on to many levels of advocacy where advocates are having to fight a system that is almost ingrained against recognizing and believing that there is a real problem that needs real solutions to it.
And right. And with few numbers of people who feel like they have a voice and can be heard, or can there aren't enough numbers to really affect the change that's necessary. So you feel like you're fighting an uphill battle at all times. And yeah, there's so many tie-ins. It's kind of odd.
One thing that has resulted as a consequence of your advocacy on behalf of your child is a falling out with your family. I know that's very difficult, but can you talk a little bit about how that has impacted the relations on both sides of your family tree?
Would you like to start, dear? Mm-hmm. Oh, he always leaves it to me. His side is better, so I will let him come in to end with the happy part of the story. My side is not so great. My family's Southern Baptist, still to this day. No matter how many times I ask them if they would like to reevaluate that based on what the Southern Baptist Convention says. My family is all made up of conservative Republicans, and every single one of them I know voted for 45. And so it's been tense for the last 5 years, and it started off with the embarrassment of having a boy wearing pink pajamas, and that they weren't even sure how to talk about that with any friends. And then when we told them that Avery actually has gender dysphoria and was going to transition, they said they still didn't quite believe in all of that. And for the first couple of years, they said they wouldn't switch pronouns or anything. They knew that kids would change their mind and it was a phase and they weren't going to get on board. And then we had a couple of years where during the few days of the year that we saw one another, because we don't live close, they used the right pronouns. They called her she and her, and they sent girl Christmas presents and birthday presents rather than insisting on having a gender-neutral option. And we thought they were getting better, but, you know, during the phone calls, the pronouns were wrong, and they would constantly slip up. And I had this nagging suspicion that when they weren't with us in person, they were still referring to Avery as a boy and he and him and all of that. And I also noticed that my mom would share pictures of my nieces and nephews on Facebook, but not our kids. Mm. And that sort of thing. And I asked her, you know, you said a long time ago that you were embarrassed at having a grandson who would wear pink pajamas. What about having a granddaughter who's transgender? Are you so embarrassed about that you can't talk about it? Do you ever talk about her? Do you ever show her picture? Do you mention her? And she didn't really answer the question directly, but then a few months ago, after National Geographic, of all things, she, you know, the true feelings came out, and I got a really long and unpleasant message that said, he will always be a boy, and yes, I'm going to call him he, because that's what he is, that's what God made him, and I've done all of the research, and I know that more than 90% of kids change their mind, which is a higher number than I've ever even heard the most rabid anti-trans people say, so I don't know where it came from. But I'm pretty sure that her news came from, you know, Fox News and Breitbart and The Blaze, because that's pretty much where they get their news, Franklin Graham. So I've, you know, had to tell her, thank you, but we're not interested in that message, and it's not true, and I wish you could see the child that we see. And, you know, Avery decided if they don't see me as a boy, or if they don't see me as a girl, I don't want to see them. And, you know, she just had a birthday, and they sent a birthday card to her. And she opened it, read it, and then said, could you send it back to them, please? So, you know, it definitely divides families, and it's fractured. And I don't know if I can talk to my brothers anymore, you know? So it's hard. But I did find out through all of that, too, that my grandmother, my dad's mom, is a National Geographic subscriber. She got it. She was so excited and so proud that she called my parents and said, I can't believe that you didn't tell us Avery was going to be there. And then we were able to go up to see her outside of Seattle. And the kids got to meet her finally for the first time. And big hugs and tears all around. So it divides family, but in some ways it gave us a little bit of our family back too.
I found that grandmas can sometimes be some of the most accepting. My grandmother is 97 years old, and she actually accepts me, whereas several of my aunts and uncles, you know, really don't. They acted like they did at first, and then it turned out that, you know, they warned us about posting transgender-related things on our Facebook feed because they didn't want their other relatives to see it. They didn't even want to see it come up if they were tagged or anything.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that much older generation, oftentimes I have a lot of friends who say they're really surprised the older people get it. And many times the message is, we had to live for other people. We got married to the people our family told us to marry. We were miserable. We weren't living for ourselves. And after 70, 80 years of doing that, I recognize that that's not healthy. You go be you and be happy.
My grandmother even told me she said it was 1929 or 1930 in Nowata, Oklahoma, where she lived. She did see a person who tried to transition from male outward appearance to female, and they ran a general store there. And then one day, they just vanished without a trace, left their house, left their store, food on the table, and she always suspected that the people in the town just took her out somewhere and got rid of her.
Oh my gosh. Or hopefully she ran off and started over.
And she,
I hope.
My grandmother said she just hoped that that would never happen to me.
Yeah.
Well, my family has been well with the issue. You know, my mother and stepfather have always been extremely liberal, so when we told them, it really was like they didn't even wasn't even something that we should be talking about. So they've been very supportive of Avery. Early on, my father, you know, I love my father to death, but he's a country boy. You know, he works, and he's always lived in the country. He's very much a Democrat. However, just being I don't want to say redneck, but being a redneck. He didn't quite understand it at first, but was very loving and accepting. And from time to time, he would slip up on pronouns, but it seems to be, I don't think he has in quite some time. And, you know, him and my stepmother are very loving and accepting. And, you know, with his extended family, again, being a lot of them being people who are country folk, if I can use that word, there's been some that have been non-accepting. And I was pleasantly pleased that my father would stand up to his own family and say, you know, look, we aren't going to have any part of that. And if you want to be part of our family and come to things like family reunions, you know, you're going to have to be accepting and we're not going to ask you to come. So for my side, it's actually been relatively easy. They've been great. They love Avery, except her for who she is, and it's never been a problem.
That must be really fortunate that you have so much support from at least one side. It helps really, I would imagine, to help Avery out in that way. Because I would think if all the grandparents and all the uncles and aunts were against you, that would be very hard for a child that age, even though as strong and I would say almost as fierce as Avery has been in standing up for herself and standing up for others like her, that would still be kind of tough to do, you know.
Yeah, it definitely has made her see that some people are open to new ideas and other people aren't, but the whole world is not going to be against her. And I think at her age, she really needed to know that.
I think that the thing that first really got you a great deal of attention as an advocate was a video that you did that went viral for Listen to Your Mother.
Mm-hmm.
And can you talk a little bit about, you know, was that really the impetus that got you into it sort of goes like a snowball, doesn't it, getting into advocacy?
It does, and it's great to be on the show with you because I get to plug your website by telling this story. We were asked to be part of a newspaper story here in Kansas City, and we were anonymous in that. It was just AJ and AJ's mom, AJ's dad, and there were so many points that I had asked the reporter, please try to make all these points because I'm so sick of hearing them. But you know, reporters have only so many words that they get to use, and they were telling the stories of three families, so he had to leave some things out, and I was frustrated by that. And you run transacity.com and were able to say, hey, I have a blog, just write what you want to say, and I put that up as a blog post, and then someone saw that and said that would be a great story for Listen to Your Mother. So I added the intro and then took most of the blog post, and that was the second half of it, and then went and gave that as a speech in front of a couple hundred people and thought, yay, if one person sees this in the audience and feels connected, we did really well. And one person did come up at the end of the night and say, my son is transitioning at KU, and thank you for this, because I haven't heard other parents talk about the subject. So we thought, well done. We've really done it. Two things. We've got a newspaper article, and I just spoke in public, and that was all we ever wanted to do. But when it was put online, it was picked up and shared and shared and shared, and it just kind of took off from there.
It was a fascinating video. It brought me to tears when I saw it, and many other people in the community, who, especially those that knew you personally and had a bit more of a connection, because it really spoke to all of us. And I want to talk a little bit more about what happened afterwards. We're going to take a short break here for some music at the bottom of the hour, and then we will return with Devi and Tom Jackson.
And before I start the music, KKFI would like to offer you a special thank you to you for tuning in today. Collaborations Live is coming up on Friday, June 30th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Historic Folly Theatre, and is a benefit for KKFI, Voice of the Community. If you want to save $10 on tickets to this wonderful night of original music, film, and dance, just enter the promo code of KKFI Loves You, spelled out with no spaces. Simply go to kkfi.org/events or follytheatre.org. When you get to the page where you select the number of tickets, enter the promo code KKFI Loves You, spelled out with no spaces, and that's love properly spelled L-O-V-E-S. Thanks for listening, supporting KKFI, and having fun at the same time. Once again, the promo code for Collaborations Live on June 30th is KKFI Loves You. And now for some music.
And welcome back to Trans Talk. We just listened to Billy Tipton's Waltz by Jess Vincent, who I communicated with earlier. She said she's going to be listening to the program. I hope she is. Hello, Jess. Jess said that she was always greatly inspired by the life of Billy Tipton and the strength that he showed in his transition, because Billy Tipton was, of course, one of the earliest known transgender men. It was a very popular jazz piano player, and even sang a little bit, and did actually visit and sing in Kansas City from time to time. So we're here with Devi Jackson and Tom Jackson, and talking a bit about the darker side of advocacy, and we've kept it a little light and breezy up till now, but I want to get into some of the things that I know Devi has suffered from quite a bit, as well as, you know, others that have a voice out there in our community. There is a love-hate relationship, I think, that a community has with those that stand up and speak out and put everything on the line to do this, and that there's a little bit of fighting for space at the microphone and a little bit of jealousy within the community. I mean, I admit that I have been jealous of others that have had space at the microphone because I felt like I had a very important story, and I would feel hurt and resentful if I wasn't invited to tell my story, and it's taken a while to become mature enough and work through that so that I feel I don't feel that anymore, so that I actually feel like other people need to speak. Sometimes it's about speaking, and sometimes it's about shutting up and listening. And I wanted to ask, you know, how have you faced some of that, haven't you, Debbie?
Yeah, I faced it, and I understand it, though. I mean, I get tired of telling our story. I know I can only imagine on the other side people get tired of hearing it. I think what the difference is that some of us can get into spaces that others can't. I am never going to be invited to spaces where a trans man can tell his story really well. I'm not going to get invited into spaces that are places for people of color to come together. They don't need to hear my story. And at the same time, I might be invited into a school, for instance, because I'm a parent. I'm not a trans person. So therefore, there's going to be less pushback from people in that community of, oh, trans people coming in with their trans agenda. Whereas I can just come in and say, no, we were just a parent who had a kid tell us who she is, and now we're trying to do our best to support her, and we know what it's like. We want you to learn from that and treat the other kids here as fairly as we would hope she would be treated. So I really think because there are so many different nuanced stories, I mean, no two people go through the same transition. No two families experience all of the same things. Like, we had one side supportive and one side not. There are a lot of families who get no support, and then there are some families who transition in communities where every single person in their life cheers them on and is supportive. And we need the really positive stories so that everyone doesn't think if you have someone in your life who's trans, it's going to be tragic. But we also need to hear the tragic stories. One of my favorite advocates to help lift her voice is a mom who lost her trans son to suicide. And we need her talking because she says, I accepted him, but I don't think I accepted him fast enough. He was ready for more, and I wasn't quite there, and I don't want other parents to lose their kids for doing the same thing. So there's a reason some of us seem to be invited. I get invited to places where they can't believe a Southern Baptist would be supportive, and I think that's part of the reason. I was seen as an anomaly. But when I get into those spaces, I also make sure that people understand, even with some of the pushback from our family, local community, losing friends, we still have it pretty good, and we have a lot of privilege that a lot of people don't. So then I start sharing other stories, and I start sharing statistics, and then I invite them to bring in those other pieces. Like, I could be a stepping stone and hopefully encourage them to bring in the alternative voices as well. So I think we all need to lift each other up.
I know that in my speaking roles, because I had, you know, I'm an anomaly in a way that I had a family that supported me. My spouse, Fiona Mouse, who is behind the controls right now, supported me. She knew I was trans before our first date, and you know, her biggest concern was, where were we going to eat that night? My career supported me. Black & Veatch actually just released a video on Facebook about me this weekend that they're hoping will go viral. I'm not sure that'll happen, but that it took a lot for a multi-billion-dollar global engineering firm to put themselves out there like that. I get many opportunities to speak too, and I get some jealousy back from people saying, well, it's really nice that you can be out and use your real name, and how lucky for you that you got flown to this country and you can talk about trans rights. And it hurts me. I understand it, but it also hurts me, like, well, if I don't take this opportunity to talk, who else would be doing it right now at this place? Mm-hmm. I think you have some of that situation too. You have had many great honors and many great chances to speak, and the thing is because you're there and because you're available and you're willing, because you've opened up your family and opened up yourself and everything, you almost have to speak, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I don't want it to always be us. There are a lot of times I'm invited to go places and I can't, or I'm tired, or I'm double or triple booked, or I just don't want to have to keep talking about us. So I will pass on interview requests to other families. I'm always asking other people, you know, they've already seen us enough. There's more out there. Let's get some variety and really show that there are bigger numbers than people realize. But at the same time, us being visible for so long, I still have parents that come up and say, we only felt like we could go speak at a school board meeting, or we felt like we could do an interview with our local newspaper because you did it first and you gave us the courage. Your family inspired us to get out there and speak up too. So, you know, I think it was all just some magical cosmic thing that we were in the right place at the right time with the right story. And that has opened the door for a lot of other people. So it's not glamorous. It's exhausting. It's time away from my kids. It's time when my husband has to, you know, take on all of the role of managing the household and being a single parent while he's also going to work and running his own business for days on end. And that puts a lot of extra stress on him too. So it's really because he's back there holding down the fort that I can go and do it in the first place. And people forget about that too. You know, it takes a toll on family time.
Absolutely. And I understand it took a toll on Tom's own business in the medical field, that early on he lost a number of clients as a result of his support of his daughter and family, correct?
That's correct. It was probably a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. You correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was about a year and a half ago that some speaking engagement that my wife had done, the news wanted to come out and interview her. She wasn't available, so they asked if I would do it. I was perfectly willing to. They asked me some questions about something related to transgender issues or relative to Avery, and they didn't even use my last name. They used Tom Jackson, and didn't even think anything of it. And then noticed over the next couple weeks that my number of patients that I would normally see, since I'm a by appointment only, started to reduce and reduce, and week after week it just kept going down. And I thought at first it was an anomaly, time of year, you know, it happens from time to time. And then happened to run into a patient that I hadn't seen for some time that knew a bunch of the other patients that I had seen. And she said, you know, I don't know how to tell you this, but I just wanted you to know that a lot of these people have told me they're not going to continue seeing you. Because they saw you on the news and they don't agree with your support for your daughter. I actually stopped and figured it out. And at one point I figured I'd lost about 40% of my business.
Good
in Lord. About a 3 month period. And frankly it hurt. It was financially challenging. We've struggled a bit. But it was more than anything, I just couldn't believe that it didn't have to do with the quality of my work. It had to do with bigoted people who don't necessarily agree with our parenting decisions. That being said, I am thankful that I've got rid of those people. And every single person that walks in the door, at least that still sees me, they know my story. You know, where my wife takes a more front seat role and probably does more speaking at larger crowds and events, I do my advocacy one person at a time. And every person that walks in the door, I never am one, particularly in my field, that throws that in their face. But if they ask about my family, I am definitely not shy about telling the truth. And on multiple occasions, I have we've changed people's opinions. And I one that really stands out, you know, I'm in a point now where, as I've slowly started to rebuild my numbers, I've got a really great group of people that I see, you know, ongoing here and there. But there was a gentleman, and you have to help me with this story, but there was a patient of mine that I hadn't seen. He had an appointment scheduled, and he called to cancel his appointment, and I didn't think anything of it, and he rescheduled the next week. And I said, what's going on? He's like, well, I was in the emergency room. And I said, okay, well, what was going on? He's like, well, I have to be honest. I overdosed on cocaine, and I was in the emergency room, and I was getting help. And I'm like, okay, is that something that's been a problem for a long time? He said, I've been struggling with this for an extended period of time, for many years, but I've been clean for 4 or 5 years, and I was just going through a rough patch. And he said, I wanted you to know that I heard your family's story on NPR, and as I was laying in the hospital bed, and I thought to myself, if a 9-year-old little girl could face the world that's primarily against her, why the hell am I, excuse me, why can I not get out of the bed and face my problems? So, I mean, even just one person at a time for us, it's really just putting our story out there and trying to affect people in a positive way.
Those are very powerful words, and that really hits right to the core of what support is all about. Thank you. We're going to take a short break here for some more station announcements and return for more with Tom and Debbie.
Support for KKFI comes from the Unicorn Theater, presenting Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical, a road trip adventure made for dancing in the theater. Based on the cult film, Priscilla follows three friends who take a battered old bus to find love, family, and the best of drag, featuring the music of Cyndi Lauper, Donna Summer, and more. Priscilla runs May 31st through June 25th. Tickets are online at unicorntheater.org.
From all of us here at KKFI, Voice of the Community, we would like to say thank you to every single supporter throughout the 2017 Spring Fund Drive. And a special thank you to Fuad and Frank at Haha Pizza Hub at 3834 Main in Midtown, Kansas City, for their support in sustaining our wonderful volunteers. Thank you, Haha Pizza Hub.
And welcome back to Trans Talk here with Tom and Debbie Jackson, talking a little bit about some of the darker side of advocacy. One thing that really upset me, Debbie and I were speaking recently at a church to do a little bit of a panel session for education on transgender issues, and she talked again about some of the threats that the family has received and how that has been steadily escalating for them. And I'd like to know, Debbie, if you could talk a little bit about what you've been going through as a result of the courageous stand your entire family has made.
Well, you know, Facebook is a funny thing. People think they know you and they think they can reach out. And a lot of the threats, actual really threatening language, started early last year, and I had this one guy who would constantly send me messages on Facebook using different profiles but always with the same image, so I knew it was him. And he would send messages on interesting dates, like my birthday and then Mother's Day and then Avery's birthday and then the day of the shooting at Pulse. He sent a message saying, I'm sitting here celebrating this as the numbers keep coming in, and you know, you could be next on the list, and you don't know who I am, where I am, how close I am, and all of that. A week after that, I was supposed to be going to Amsterdam, and the kids and Tom were supposed to be going to a pride parade so that Avery could be the grand marshal of the parade. And somehow he knew that too. And he said, enjoy your trip while you're overseas, because I know where your kids will be. And, you know, they'll be at this parade. And that was one of the most terrifying things ever. And that's when we first started talking to the FBI agents and people like, what can we do? How can we track this guy down? How can we know where he really is? Because now he's making threats. It's not necessarily me, but he's threatening the well-being of my child while I'm not even going to be on the same continent. And that's a really uneasy feeling as a parent. So thankfully, Facebook changed some of its issues, and now people have to ask permission. They have to send message requests. So a lot of those really threatening things have gone down, because most people aren't brazen enough to ask you to accept a threatening message from them. So it's kind of been a nice thing that they did. But like, once the National Geographic cover came out, this was all around the time of the election, And unfortunately, there's a whole group of people out there who have been emboldened by that. And just the post that I made of the cover started getting all kinds of these memes from white supremacists, and they're about gas chambers and, you know, messages all over Twitter about, you know, the bullet that she needs in her head and killing them all. And you know, it's a lot of the things that happen on the dark web, where if you go and you want to read the kind of stuff that's out there, you can find it. And there's, you know, people on watch lists. And like I said, we've talked with the FBI quite a bit, and the cyber crimes units at the police department here and the FBI. And we've talked to the state attorneys and all of that, because, you know, people just feel like they can say anything they want on the other side of a computer and there are no repercussions, because cyberbullying laws aren't where they need to be. Our lawmakers are more concerned with where people pee than keeping people safe from actual threats that come in over a computer. So it can be intimidating at times, but I also have to hope that those people are only brave because they have a screen in front of them, and that they would probably, you know, talking about pee, they'd probably wet their pants if they were confronted in person by someone trying to stand up to them.
How has this impacted you, Tom? I mean, I imagine this makes you feel very angry, and there's also kind of a sense of being helpless, because you can't go out and grab these people. You can't do unto them as they've done unto you. It wouldn't be right anyways to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely taken a toll. I think more than anything, anxious is about the best word. At first, anger was probably a more appropriate description, but it just makes me very anxious. You know, when the National Geographic cover hit, not only were we getting messages online that were pretty descriptive, but a white supremacist group basically had hacked all of our personal information and posted it on the internet. So they had posted our address, pretty much everything about our private lives, where I work, what my work address was. So it became pretty scary for a while. And, you know, we've had other things that have happened. Just a couple weeks ago is a great example. You know, at the time, just to backtrack, at the time of the National Geographic, when we were getting the threats, we put a security system on the house. We put cameras around so we could track everything that was going on. But even just as close to 2 weeks ago, since things have died down, there was a car that was sitting in front of the house for about 45 minutes, and I thought it was extremely strange, so I sat there and watched it, and finally just felt really uneasy because the passenger in the car was just eyeballing the house a little more than I felt comfortable with. So I decided I was going to go out and just ask them if they needed any help. And so I kind of walked around the back towards the passenger side of the car, and as soon as the passenger saw me, he had said something to the driver, and they sped off at about 50 miles an hour as fast as they could. Which seemed like very odd behavior,
yes,
for someone who just may be lost or sitting in front of a house. So it makes me very anxious. And as I've said to other people, it's a very real threat that you just never know when something may happen. And even to the point where when I'm with my family in public, or when I'm in public with Avery, I'm always looking in about 10 feet in every direction just to see who I may have to be worried about.
Situational awareness, I guess.
That's the best way to put it, yes. And that's exhausting.
I just want to say as a final word that I believe so much in what the two of you are doing, and I know that so many people out there listening also, they are your biggest fans, and they are very proud of you, not just for the support of your transgender daughter, but for getting out there and getting your voices out there and putting your well-being on the line, even putting everything on the line to go out and be the messengers. And I want to thank you both personally for that work that you do, as well as coming on our program today. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
We're going to move on to the community calendar with Fiona, who is still over behind the board there. And Mouse, it's all yours.
Thank you. And I'm here with the Kansas City Community Calendar today. Every month, I lead the Kansas City Sofa Group for significant others, friends, family, and allies of transgender persons. We meet on the first and third Wednesday of the month, and in July, our meetings will be at 6:30 on the 5th and the 19th in Study Room 115 at Leeward Pioneer Library. For driving directions and other sofa information, you can visit transitcity.org/sofa. And on Monday, June 26th, you can join Joko Q Space at Mod Pizza in Olathe for an event to celebrate the anniversary of marriage equality. Joko Q Space is a new youth group for LGBTQ youth, which meets on the second and fourth Thursday of each month from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at St. Andrew Christian Church, 13890 West 127th Street, Olathe, Kansas 66062. For more details on the youth group and the event, you can go to www.facebook.com/JokoLGBTYouth. And GLSEN, an organization that works to ensure that LGBTQ students don't slip through the cracks in education, is doing their biennial survey of LGBTQ youth about their experiences in school. If you identify as LGBTQ in any way, they would like to hear from you. If you want to take their survey, you can go to www.glsen.org/survey. There's also a link on there to take the survey in Spanish if that is better for you. And there's lots of other events in Kansas City this month. So to get a second copy of those URLs and those links, or for any other events, please go out to the 10th Voice timeline on Facebook if you're interested and get more details.
Well, I would like to thank everyone for tuning in to Trans Talk, this week's edition of the 10th Voice. I want to extend many thanks to our special guests, Debbie and Tom, for coming on the show and opening themselves up a bit about some of the trials of being an advocate and having such a strong voice. I want to thank our sound engineer and producer and co-hostess, Fiona Nowling, behind the board, and our normal sound engineer and producer, well, I don't mean to say normal, but Linda Wilson, who is... Okay, she says there's nothing normal about her. Linda Wilson, who has also been in the studio. Remember that you can always send an email with your thoughts and suggestions to the10thvoice@gmail.com. Next up, stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman with Sharon Lockhart, Amy Bell, and Fiona and myself. And be sure to join The 10th Voice next weekend as well on Saturday at 1 p.m. for more discussion of LGBT topics and events which shape our lives and our world. You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's Community Radio.